Chapter 65. February 12th of year 19. I did not expect seeing Valkyrie again would be so painful for me. Despite the vessel being a technically modified replica, it is a direct connection to my earlier life as a human. In particular, my mind hearkens to Francesca, the woman I love, the woman who is now so far away from me, separated by time and space. I open the hatch to let Adam and Eve climb inside. The moment I can see only the top of Eve's head, her hair, as she is disappearing into the darkness of the vessel, my mind instantly flashes back to Francesca. And I also visualize Francesca when Eve sits down in the pilot seat. I have to be careful not to let these memories impede my ability to function, and if necessary, I can delete them from my memory module. But I would rather die. Adam and Eve must have noticed that something is wrong with me. They are actually being courteous to each other. Perhaps this has to do with the voyage lying ahead of them? It certainly will be less arduous than my adventure on Enceladus. If I'd only had fabricators back then. With their help, I have now solved the energy problem that I constantly had to deal with on Enceladus. We will gain energy for the electric drive by exploiting temperature differentials within the ocean. For this purpose, we will drag a specialized centerboard along, reaching down more than 500 meters. It is already swimming in the ocean, and we will only have to grab it. I am ready to give the order to start. Then I receive a message from one of the ISUs and switch its signal to the pilot screen. It is hard to believe, but the drone has already found something. There is a strong energy source on the sea bottom, approximately 50 kilometers northeast of our location. It is not a volcanic vent or anything of that sort, because the object is clearly alien-made. This could be it, Eve says. You can tell that she's trying to suppress her hopeful excitement a bit. No matter what it is, we have to get there as soon as possible, Adam insists. He stands next to her and knocks against the monitor. It could. I briefly wonder if any natural source could possibly be responsible for the signal, but cannot think of one. So I end my statement with, be dangerous. Well, the idea of sitting around uselessly for the next 80 years is definitely dangerous, Adam replies. I cannot argue with his sentiment, so I start the engines. I swerve to the south to pick up the generator and then follow a northeasterly course. We should cover the 50 kilometers in one day. 2 hours later, we are gliding close to the bottom of the sea. We run almost soundlessly, moving at a depth of 2,000 meters. It is pitch dark. The searchlights illuminate the area directly in front of Valkyrie, but that only serves to alleviate our boredom. Otherwise, not much is happening. The hair plants, we learn, also cover the bottom of the ocean. Could life down here have been more varied before the great eruption? Perhaps the few resistant species used this chance to occupy all ecological niches. I wonder how we should approach the source of the signal. How do I know if its inhabitants will have peaceful intentions toward our sudden presence? Perhaps they consider anything different from them to be enemies? Have they been waiting for us? Maybe for 1,000 years? Or do they want to be left alone? We will not know any of these answers unless we try. If we die doing so, I catch myself wishing for it. In some respects, wouldn't that be better than finding more ancient relics and having to spend the coming decades alone on this inhospitable planet? Eve is constantly watching the monitor that depicts the sea floor gliding past. Nothing happens, but she's taking notes. What are you recording? I ask. The vegetation density, she answers. This gives us indications about how supportive of life the seafloor is, and also about the variability of this species. Eve will find something to keep her busy in the future. Adam glances over her shoulder, tapping a foot and twiddling his thumbs. The energy source is 2 kilometers distant. All scanners are working at maximum level, but we do not get a clear image of the target. However, they detect something else. Fast object moving toward Valkyrie. Impact in 40 seconds, the computer says, and then a shrill alarm is heard. Through the hands of Jay the robot, I immediately take over the controls, and the engines slowly turn the vessel. I hope that the object racing toward us cannot modify its course. Impact in 30 seconds. The thing takes aim at us again. We have gained 10 seconds. I give the command. Eject ISUs 5 and 6. Those are the last two sensor units. I had reserved them in order to examine our target more closely. but now I am sending them on a collision course with the object threatening us.
Is that a torpedo coming for us?
Adam's voice sounds completely calm. I have to assume so, I reply. If it keeps up its speed and hits us, it will puncture the hull.
Then we should put on our suits, Eve suggests. Or are we going to swim?
She looks down at her lower belly, where the gills are hidden. Her voice proves how excited she is.
You'd better not try it at a water temperature of 6 degrees, I warn them.
Impact in 20 seconds.
What are the ISUs doing? Can they stop this thing?
The mysterious object zigzags when it notices the two small sensor units, but the ISUs are very agile and manage to keep pace with it. The countdown continues.
19, 18, 17.
At 15 seconds, ISU-5 magnetically attaches itself to the torpedo, and at 12 seconds, ISU-6 has also reached its target. Once the countdown arrives at 10, both generate a strong electrical field that should incapacitate any unshielded electronic systems. I hope the extraterrestrial technology is not based on completely different principles.
Impact unlikely,
the computer says.
The electrical shock has worked.
Oh man, Adam says, and sinks back into a seat. Eve wipes the sweat off her forehead.
I have to pee, she says.
The toilet is in the stern, I say, pointing her in that direction. I look around, but there is no second projectile. Our opponent might now assume we can deactivate any of these projectiles. I alone know that we have no additional ISUs. I decide we should establish a dialogue. I send a standard message that was developed on Earth to use in first contact situations, broadcasting it on all possible channels. The answer arrives very quickly.
This is Marchenko,
our adversary greets us.
I'm glad you are here. Sorry about what just happened, but you obviously triggered my automatic defense system. I'd completely forgotten I installed it shortly after our arrival. I absolutely did not want to attack you.
Marchenko, Adam says, flabbergasted.
What? There are two of you?
I don't know anything about this, I reply. However, anyone with a sufficiently criminal mindset could easily have copied my consciousness, even though that would violate the AI laws of Earth. But my very existence is already incompatible with those laws. Officially, I don't even exist.
But how did the other one get here?
Probably the same way we did, Adam, with his own messenger. But right now, the more important question is, how do we react to his radio message?
Can we believe in and trust the other Marchenko?
Adam asks. I cannot say. I would give my life for you. But then we three have a common history, and I raised you with the help of messenger. I don't know anything about the other AI calling himself Marchenko. Perhaps the AI was manipulated in some way, but we won't be able to find out about that.
I'm more optimistic, Eve says. We can hear him and see him, and then judge him by his actions.
So we should risk contact? I ask.
It's not what I expected from this journey, but at least it's something new, so yes, Adam says,
and Eve nods in agreement. After I reply to the greeting sent by my alter ego, the other Marchenko invites us to his station as I expected.
A Valkyrie! How original, he says. I have an extension attached to the west wing, and it has an airlock. Unfortunately, you will have to swim through the cold water briefly because your vessel does not have a coupling port.
We slowly approach the station, and no one is shooting at us. I switch the camera image to the main monitor screen. Do you recognize this? I ask.
Looks like Messenger, but with various additional arms, Eve suggests.
I point at the monitor and say, the long one here has an airlock at the end, which the voice mentioned. We are going to enter the station that way.
So we have to swim after all?
Adam says excitedly, rubbing his hands at the added adventure factor. Only out of sheer necessity, I remind him, and in your spacesuits. Once again, it is a difficult moment for me having to flood Valkyrie. The vessel only has a simple hatch at the top, so it gets flooded whenever people enter or leave. This is cumbersome and represents a design flaw, but fortunately, it does not damage the equipment. The last time I opened this hatch was shortly before my death on Enceladus. Eve launches herself out first, followed by Adam, and I, in Jay's body, am the rear guard.
Why don't you come over via radio data transmission? The other Marchenko asks me. You don't have to get poor Jay wet.
I prefer mobility, I reply, and I'm a bit overprotective where the kids are concerned. You know how it is. I can't leave them alone. The other Marchenko laughs and opens the airlock chamber. It is not large enough for the three of us, so I let Adam and Eve go in first, since I do not mind the icy cold water as much. I cannot suppress a feeling of unease, however, as the door closes behind them. What if the other Marchenko simply locks me out of the station? But then again, what reason would he have to do that? We should be glad we found each other. Six have a better chance of survival than three. Where there is a second Marchenko, Marchenko 2, I decide to call him, as my sanity demands I be number one. Surely Adam 2 and Eve 2 cannot be far away. The airlock stays closed, longer than technically necessary. I'm getting more nervous, but then the door opens.
Sorry for making you wait, but the system is used so rarely that it sometimes doesn't work properly, Marchenko 2 says apologetically.
I pull my heavy body into the airlock and then push the close button on the inside. The water is pumped out and replaced by air. I automatically measure the oxygen content. 17%, more than Adam and Eve need. The two of them are waiting for me directly outside the chamber.
They absolutely insisted on waiting for you, Marchenko 2
says with a slightly mocking tone.
They seem to be a bit timid. Would you now please come to the control room?
We walk side by side through the corridor that is 8 meters wide and obviously built by fabricators. Only fabricators can create such seamless structures from any available materials. Everything still smells brand new, as if it had just now been made for us. The only thing the builders skimped on is lighting, which consists of just two fluorescent strips. I believe I can detect the fluorescence molecules of the mushrooms. A door opens as soon as we approach the end of the corridor, and we arrive in a large, brightly lit circular room.
Welcome to our home, says my voice, which in this case does not belong to me. Make yourselves comfortable here.
There are two pilot seats. Even as he speaks, they are automatically turning into couches.
Aren't those Adam and Eve's seats? Eve asks.
She must also be assuming that Marchenko 2 hardly arrived here alone.
Surprised, Marchenko 2 asks, How do you know their names?
I am startled every time I hear my own voice speaking sentences I did not form in my own mind.
I think the Creator has predetermined all of our names. You also call yourself Marchenko.
Because I am Marchenko, the other one says.
Are you sure? Eve asks. The Creator might have manipulated your memory. It would only take a few storage locations.
The other one laughs and says, Marchenko, your little girl is really cute. But to answer her question, Adam and Eve are usually sleeping upstairs. They just aren't here today.
As if on cue, a round hatch opens in the ceiling and a ladder descends.
You two youngsters can see this for yourselves, Marchenko 2 offers. And of course, you are invited into the main computer, Marchenko. I don't even want to imagine how long you've had to manage without a quantum computer. Messenger certainly has enough resources.
The idea of using a quantum computer is practically electrifying for me. I have almost forgotten what a great feeling it is to produce new knowledge in next to no time, to draw conclusions faster than all of mankind, all those 10 billion humans combined could do it. Well, unfortunately, I had not completely forgotten that feeling. I would very much like to accept the invitation, but something keeps me from it.
A robot with a gut feeling, Adam would say, laughing about me.
Both Adam and Eve already feel right at home here. It's no wonder, since the similarities to our messenger are uncanny. They are lounging on their couches, zapping through the entertainment program they've had to do without for almost 2 months. In a way, this is the quantum computer experience for humans.
I'm going to stay mobile a while longer, I say. Later, I will have to tuck the kids in bed.
What about your own Adam and Eve?
They are currently on an excursion, as they call it, Marchenko 2 replies. We believe we might have discovered the source of the radio message.
Where is it? I ask.
Here in the ocean, not far away. Less than half a day from here.
And you let them go all by themselves?
Well, you have to trust in them at some point, Marchenko 2 says. They're over 18 years old now.
My Adam and Eve are 2 years younger. Accordingly, this Marchenko must have started his voyage 2 years earlier, or he was awakened sooner.
The signal, I say. I definitely have to take a look at it.
I'll send you the coordinates,
Marchenko too says, seeming sincere. I compare the data with the bearing I detected during my trip to the leaf canopy. They match within the limits of my measurement precision.
You could check on it tomorrow and see for yourself, Marchenko too suggests. That would be all right with me, as you could then accompany my Eve and my Adam back here. Are you still living according to Earth time? We're used to it here, even though no sunlight reaches us through the water. Accordingly, it is 11 p.m. now, my bedtime. An old man needs his routine.
He laughs in a booming voice, which really is mine, and then he disconnects. Are you okay? I ask Adam. Adam raises his thumb. Somewhere he found something that resembles potato chips. Eve laughs at some scene on her private monitor. I need neither food nor comfort. I roll Jay's body to a spot near the door and consider some interesting questions. What does this new situation mean for all of us? Marchenko, too, somehow managed to bring his entire spaceship down here. Could this help us in the future? Would it be worthwhile to fly after the former inhabitants of this planet?